Hello, folks, and welcome to another fantastic episode of RFRX. My name is Eric Wells, and I'm going to be your host this evening. And with me today is my good dear friend and fantastic comrade at RFR is Sasha D'Souza, and he is the, oh my gosh, Oceania Support Group Director. I think I said it wrong.
Based down in Australia, so good day to everybody.
All right, tonight, our fantastic guest is Gwen Blodgett, and she spent the majority of her life in a fundamentalist evangelical background, living and teaching extreme religious ideas. She was a missionary and pastor's wife. She was a Christian bookstore owner, a gospel clown. Folks, let me say that. She was a gospel clown. I love that. And a teacher and advocate of purity culture. Gwen lives a full-time life in clothing optional community and frequently goes days without clothes. She is the host of Gwen's Day, a weekly talk and music show on Nude Radio. She has found the principles of nudist lifestyle enjoyable and a source of healing for her own religious trauma. Gwen joined RFR as a helpline agent in the summer of 2019 and currently serves as an RFR board member and as the project director for RFR 3.0, an initiative to improve the technology used at recovering from religion. Gwen, hello and welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Eric. This is so exciting.
Yeah, it is. You and I talked about this last year, and I've really been looking forward to this show ever since.
Yes, I remember as we started talking, you were kind of like, wait, what? What do you do?
It's so great. So, before we kind of get into the topic, first off, you and I have done a Faces of RFR interview, like 2019. That was so fun to do as well. And we got to learn really a lot about you. I'll go ahead and put that link in the show a little bit later on. But can you mind giving us a brief kind of tour of where you were and kind of how you got to where you are now?
Sure. So I've got a little bit of that covered in the talk, but essentially grew up very, very fundamental, and eventually came out of that and decided to check things off and tried being a nudist and have found that I absolutely love that life. Now, I do want you to know, while you can see my shoulders, I am wearing clothing because we do not have a social contract of having nudity right here. So that's one of the very key things about being in social nudity is you do not want to introduce your naked body where it's not welcome. So yes.
I like that distinction. That actually makes me feel safe and comfortable. that's the first guy I kind of heard about that. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing is we are not a colony. We are a community. And while there are different rules of different communities, ours is clothing optional. You will never be forced to take off clothes. Number one question I get asked is, what do you do when it gets cold out? Well, silly, I put on clothes.
I put on a sock.
Yeah, I put on a coat or I turn the heat up or, yeah. It is funny having grown up in the North where, we huddled in blankets and didn't want to pay those heating bills and kept it down to 64 at night. I tend to keep my house at 74 now simply because I prefer not to put anything on.
Yeah. Can you briefly tell us what the gospel clown thing is? That just sounds so interesting.
It started, actually, I've always loved performing and I did ventriloquism and gospel magic and puppets, and it was just kind of natural to add on the clowning. And my mom and I had a small ministry and we traveled through New England doing vacation Bible school for small churches. And I was Happy the Clown. And to drum up children to come to VBS, we'd go into the local parks and hand out balloon animals and invitations to VBS and, gave people tracts that said, love Jesus the way we do, or you'll go to hell. So a little scary from the clown on it, but.
So Gwen, what I'm hearing here is you were fully invested in your Christianity and your religious background. What, since childhood?
Yes. Yes. Yes, very, very much so. Very much so. So I actually first remember praying to receive Jesus when I was about 4 years old. And a couple weeks later, I locked my sister and her friend in a closet and stood there in the dark and told them that this wasn't as, if they thought this was scary, hell was worse, and they needed to pray this prayer so they wouldn't go to hell. And my sister still is, she's very active in the church still, and she still calls that her testimony of when she got saved.
Wow. So I imagine breaking free and leaving religion or questioning things came at a bit of a cost with family?
A little bit of a cost, but also a surprise. When I realized I didn't believe anymore, I kind of was like, oh my goodness, I don't believe in God. I think there's a word for that. You know, I had to go Google what I was now. It was, and I was in my early 40s, mid 40s. when I told my daughter, who was grown, she was in her kitchen, and I said, I need to tell you something. And she's like, what? And I go, I'm an atheist now. And she just kind of turned around, her jaw dropped, and she goes, now? You couldn't have figured this out when I was a kid?
Wow.
And you were also very, back in the day, you were very much into purity culture. And
yes.
From what I recall, kind of having been indoctrinated into it, nudism was not something at all that was welcome or appropriate within the worldview of purity culture.
No. And actually, my first husband, we were missionaries together, and then he was a pastor, and I got my PhD, putting hubby through seminary degree. So when he found out, our son was home from the Air Force for a visit, and we did one of those surprise visits, and I said, you know, hey, if you want, he can spend a few days, you want to meet up, and we can hand him over. And he said, no, I can come get him. I said, no, I can meet you halfway. He says, no, I can come get him. I said, you know where I live? He goes, yeah, you're just north of Tampa. And I said, it's a nudist community. And he goes, oh, you can meet me halfway.
Wow.
My son said his entire visit, every 30 to 60 minutes, his dad would just go, wait, are you serious? Was your mom telling the truth? Really? So
it's fair to say they haven't quite accepted your lifestyle.
Well, you know, they love me, and you know, they take every opportunity to remind me that life is short and I need to get right before my life, you know. Mm-hmm. But that was me before. So, you know, I know where it's coming from. So it just is. Yeah.
Well, I know you have a slideshow and you've kind of got things in order. I don't want to ruin it or get ahead or get the horse before the wagon. So you want to get this thing going?
Sure. Now, what I don't remember, and I apologize, is do we go over the poll questions now or later?
It's up to you. We can not do it at all, or we can just kind of look through them now. What would you like to do?
Let's take a look now. I think it'd be interesting.
All right. So the first question is, what do you think of when you hear the word nudist? The majority of people, 62% of the people, selected the word freedom. The next after that was cool. And the least, about 4%, was family. And it was kind of balanced between the others. I can move on to the next question, but what do you think about that, Gwen? What are your thoughts?
Well, I will say, when I first tried being a nudist, my very first day, social nudity, you know, I'd been being naked by myself for a long time, and even when I took a shower. So all of you have probably experienced with a little bit of nudity. but within 10 minutes, all I could feel, I mean, the first 10 minutes were like, I'm naked and people can see me and I'm outside. And then after about 10 minutes, I went, I've never felt so free. It was just this total feeling of freedom. And it's just been an evolution of freedom. There's nothing like getting outside, sun and the wind. And I won't torture you with this, but you know, when we have karaoke here, I redo the words to Heathens, and I say, all my friends are naked, take it off, let the sun kiss your skin. And it's truly a beautiful feeling to have your entire body, feel the wind or the sun, and just enjoy that. So I'm glad to see freedom. I do live in a family resort as well. We have 14 children that live here, and they range in all ages. We do find children sometimes in their preteen, early teen years choose to wear clothes more often than not. Not with all children. The younger children love it, though. I mean, remember as parents trying to keep your two-year-old with clothes on? You live here, you don't have to worry about it. It's just cool.
The second question is, what is your experience with social nudity? And social nudity, that is kind of a unique set of terms right there. Were you going to talk about that in your presentation? Kind of
a little bit, but just as you know, there's nudity that you might enjoy being naked in your own backyard or in your hot tub or, you know, just at home or when you're sleeping. And then social nudity is where you are outdoors around other people being naked. And it is not a sexual thing. I mean, there are places, if that's what you're looking for, I can tell you where to go. But, you know, I tend to skip those personally. It's really about health. And I'll touch on it a little bit later on one of the slides.
Yeah, I'm glad you highlighted that, because I think a lot of people coming in with naivety might assume that there's a sexual component to nudity, or nudism, I should say. So I'm glad that you'll clarify that for us.
Yeah. Now, I will say that the freedom of being able to be naked and being able to love my body has improved my own view on my sexuality and my own sex life. But that's been a benefit of being a nudist, not part of my nudist activities.
Right. Interesting.
You know what it's like to journey out of a once cherished belief. Maybe you were devoutly religious, escaped a cult, or perhaps you simply navigated out of some very difficult days, and now you'd like to help someone else do the same. Recovering From Religion is a wonderful support organization for people who feel confused, troubled, and alone as they come to grips with the possibility that they no longer hold a religious belief, or that they risk losing everything if they're honest with themselves and others about their journeys. These people need our help, and Recovering From Religion needs yours. RFR is seeking volunteers. Perhaps you're formerly religious, or you have a specific skill set like speaking a foreign language. Maybe you're just a good listening ear. The RFR Volunteer Training Program will help you translate those abilities into critical assistance, encouragement, and support for the men, women, and youth who contact RFR every day from all over the world. You can relate. You can understand. And you can make their journeys easier. Join the team at Recovering From Religion and remind someone else that they are not alone and someone is here to help. To find out more, click the volunteer tab at recoveringfromreligion.org.
So the responses we got here is that most of the people, 42%, were curious about it. We got 10% that are nudists, about 31% that have tried it, and 17% have no experience at all and don't even want to try it. So it's kind of a nice looking little bell curve there. But
yeah. And it really isn't for everybody. Just like rock climbing isn't for everybody and sailing isn't for everybody. But I do hope that as you hear tonight and I talk through some of the things that I've learned, that you can take some of those principles, even if you never try social nudity. There's still a lot of great principles around shedding some of that purity culture and the shame and the sin culture that when you are, like I like to say, I drank all the Kool-Aid and I dove to the bottom of the deep end every day.
And there's no wonder. I mean, we came from a biblical background where Adam and Eve were ashamed of their naked bodies. So to be able to address that and break free is going to be so liberating.
It really is. It really is.
Now, the third question is, how do you feel about your own body? And here we actually have a really nice looking bell curve. 6% extremely negative, 33% negative, The highest, 37%, is neutral, and then 23% is positive, and 2% is extremely positive. I gotta say, for me personally, I probably would fall in the negative category. I don't necessarily like looking at myself in the mirror, and I'm really critical about myself, and so.
And no doubt that's one of the things you'll address, Gwen, is that in order to feel comfortable with others, we'd have to feel comfortable with ourselves first. Is that correct?
Yes. And I do think, and I don't have this later, so I'm going to dive in here a little bit. One of the big debates when I went to Bible school was about whether or not as people we were dichotomous or trichotomous. And so that meant, were we a body and a soul spirit, or were we a body, a soul, and a spirit? And I'll tell you, the debates between the different groups over this was, I haven't seen worse debates about anything. And the key about that, though, is they always made your body something separate from who you were. You were your soul, spirit, you were your spirit, you were your soul. The body was something you resided in. And that really creates this idea that your body is something that you got stuck in, or you have to control. I mean, there's a lot in religion about controlling your body. And when you realize that actually, no, this is me. This is all me. This is, I'm not me stuck in a body. My body is me. Those feelings of negativity start to whittle away. It's not instantaneous, but it does help you realize that, well, wait a second. This is my skin. This is my face. This is me, and it's okay to take care of me. And you see a lot more body positivity. The other thing is that you get out there. No, so I don't know what you're thinking when you go down to the pool here. But you go down to the pool here, you have every age group, you have every body height, every body size, you have just about every age, and you suddenly go, you know what? I'm normal. Wrinkles are normal. You know, little bags are normal. A lot of weight can be normal. It's just about enjoying yourself.
That's really powerful that you highlighted that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
And we're getting some great questions coming through on the chat there too. So please feel free to put those questions there. Eric and I will tally those all up, and we'll be able to put those to Gwen after her presentation. And if we happen to miss your question, please don't be offended. It will just be an accident on our behalf. So feel free to post it in the chat again for us.
Yeah. And Sasha and Eric, if at any point a question is just really relevant to what's happening, feel free to interrupt me. Happy to do that. So...
Thank you. Well, Phil, when you're comfortable and you're ready, feel free to start the presentation. We'd love to see it.
I absolutely will. And I made a note as to which one of the options I have to pick. We practiced this a couple of times, and yet I hit the wrong one. We did practice. Again.
That's okay. Bear with us, everybody.
Oh, my goodness.
It's all right. It's a very common problem. My wife says I have a hard time finding the button too. So it's very, very common. Don't worry about it.
Okay. You know what it is that I wrote the wrong one down on my sticky, and I was sure I had written the right location. So anyway, tonight I want to talk about nudist life, what it is and why it might be good for you.
Confirming that everybody can see the slides up on the screen. If you have any issues, drop us a message.
Good to go.
Fantastic.
All right. And there's not a lot of words on here. It's mostly pictures, but I will explain what they are just in case, you know, you're not tuned in to viewing or have trouble seeing on whatever device you're on. So here, this is me enjoying my front yard in my own little private Eden. And this is a Facebook safe picture. That is one of the things I do is I leave my phone behind when I'm going out, because otherwise I accidentally post non-Facebook safe items.
Well, and you wouldn't have pockets to put your phone in anyway, so.
No, but you, there's things called pocketbooks and bags and, okay. You know. Now, you will notice that my house has a keypad because there's nowhere to carry my keys most of the time. So I use a keypad to get in and out of my house, so I don't have to worry about keys. So this one's fun. I just thought we'd lighten things up a little bit. This just says, when I said to wear regular weekend attire on casual Friday, I didn't know you were a nudist. So
wonderful.
Now, it is sometimes, you know, I appreciate the comments earlier. It is okay to laugh a little bit. You know, getting used to being naked is a new thing, or thinking about it can give you the giggles sometimes. The key, again, is avoiding that, you know, shaming or, you know, taking it to a place where you're being offensive to somebody. So a little bit on the history of nudism. And here I've got a picture of a Egyptian sphinx and a naked woman in historical center of downtown of Dresden, Germany. And what I thought was cool about this statue is that we know that in Egyptian culture, oftentimes people didn't wear clothes. We know that the current nudist movement started in Germany. In reality, all of us started naked, and the human race started naked. Mm-hmm. And it's just part of a sort of a natural growth of things. Nudism was actually came out of a desire to bring health back to people who were working during the Industrial Revolution. Everybody was in the city, they were getting sick. And so the idea was get out in the sun, be naked, eat healthy. And so the original group tends to be referred to more as naturists, and nudity was only one part of that. It was exercise and health and clean living. As it moved into France, it became more of a nudist style where they kind of abandoned some of it, or maybe lowered the emphasis on the other aspects. Even today in the US, you'll have naturist gatherings and nudist gatherings. I was once asked the difference between nudist and naturist, and I said the amount of hair. You'll find naturists do not shave, they're vegetarians, they live very close to the earth. They tend to do a lot of the fire circles, and there's a lot you can learn from them. I'm more of a nudist. I do not want to braid my underarms. So, you know, just kind of my own personal thing. Now, one of the other misconceptions that people have about nudist culture is, now for me, I did not find nudist culture until I left religion. Imagine my surprise when I found that, oh, there are naturist Christians, nudist Christians. There are, my neighbor around the corner is a chaplain. The nudist community down the road has a church. They also host a weekend Christian retreat. And one of the things that I hear the most is, well, of course, you know, the disciples often didn't wear clothes. They took off their cloak to go fishing. So the disciples fished naked with Jesus. And, you know, throughout, they have a way of justifying that. So that was a surprise for me. Mm. It's a beautiful thing. So going on, I just wanted to touch on how I actually found nudity myself. So when I was in my second marriage, my 14-year-old daughter was constantly coming up with something to shock us at the dinner table. And I finally was like, I'm going to get her back. So I went, summer vacation this year is at a nudist camp. And she went, there's no such thing. And in the back of my head, I'm going, I think there's such a thing, but you know, I'm faking it. And so like I Google, I go, yeah, it is. And I pulled up a camp up in New York and I'm like, okay, here we go. This is where we're going. And she's like, no, we're not. So anytime she got out of hand, I said, careful, I'm going to schedule that nudist vacation. And, you know, so that became kind of a joke for a couple of years. And then I was out dancing and it was so hot, so hot. And this guy said, you know, you could dance naked if you came to my club. And I was like, really? And it took us 2 years before we finally went and tried it. But like I said earlier, within about 10 minutes, I was like, this is what I want. About halfway through our first day, we're like, we'd come back. By the end of the day, we'd bought a membership and we actually were back 2 days later. And within a month, we'd bought a place and we're going there every weekend. We eventually started bringing our kids as well. And I mean, they were teenagers, and I brought my grandchildren, and there's nothing better than swimming naked. I cannot stand going to a pool now where I have to wear a bathing suit. It's just like so uncomfortable. You know, I want to just swim. So I did want to get back to a little bit of where I came from and how this is so kind of a bit of a shock. So this is me, sweet little me, playing Mary in a church play. And aww. Yeah, and I really was all in. One of the reasons I love recovering from religion is that during my teen years, I had read the Bible multiple times. I was a Bible quizzer. I'd memorized tons of verses. I was already teaching Sunday school and vacation Bible school. I was performing with my ventriloquist puppets. And suddenly it dawned on me that God was kind of a dick. But I had no concept that there was something other than God and Satan. And had I even been exposed to the concept of atheism or of any other worldview, I really think that in my teen years, I might have found something different. Instead, I ended up doing everything the church said no to. And there's some things the church says no to that really aren't great for 15-year-olds to be doing. So natural consequences, I doubled down. And then through another series of events and some traumas, I found myself a single pregnant teenager. And that involved a lot of confessions at the front of the church and apologies and all that sort of stuff. So that left me in a place where I had now missed out on God's perfect will for my life. And as a child who had grown up committed to making it to the mission field, to winning souls for Jesus, who continually found ways to give more to the church and to memorize more and do more, it was devastating to realize that I'd missed out. And there was even a period of time where I wasn't even sure if I could get to heaven, but I wanted to make sure others didn't miss out on the chance. And so I continued to live the life because I didn't want anyone else to suffer what I had.
Wow. Real quick, they made you go in front of the entire congregation as a 15 or 16-year-old and share this stuff?
Well, the apology, absolutely, yes.
Wow. That's not something I've ever been a part of the churches I was growing up with, but that's really humiliating.
That public shaming. Yeah. If that's not a definition of religion, with that fear, obligation and guilt and public shaming, I don't know what is. It's terrible.
Yes, there's a lot of it, and it was not pleasant, and the reason I share that is that was a big part of what drove me into the behaviors later. So I did eventually marry. And this is our prayer card when we were missionaries. Love that 90s hair.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And of course, it was a little risque to have my button undone like that. That was just a little bit more skin than was normally okay. You know, and a big part of life then was that, you know, you had to control yourself because other people's sexual sins were your fault. So if you were the victim of any sort of sexual assault, it was because you had not properly you hadn't worn the right clothes, or you'd put yourself in a situation you didn't belong in, or you'd sent the wrong message.
Almost like victim blaming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. And that's, you know, as you read, and I know we just had the talk on purity culture, so I want to double up on that too much, but a lot of that is really this idea that you are responsible for your brother, and if you do anything to cause them to sin, which again can just be thinking or looking at you and liking what they see, and now you've caused them to sin, and it's your fault. So now I do want to prepare anybody to turn away. This next slide is a little bit scary for some. So if clowns bother you, you don't want to see this one.
I'm going to have to add a clown trigger warning at the YouTube video.
Yes. Yes.
Gwen, right now I'm reading It from Stephen King, and this is kind of freaking me.
There's no red balloons, so we're okay at the moment.
Yeah. So we won't stick on that very long. The key thing is, and again, I found this quote, Brene Brown, where perfectionism exists, shame is always lurking. And that was just really so much of my life, was there was this standard of perfectionism that you had to reach. And if you didn't, it was your fault. And there was a lot of shame. And again, because of my teen pregnancy, I was never going to reach that standard. But because of God's grace and forgiveness, I could have a second best or a third best, but I had to work hard at it. And I had an opportunity for my children to not suffer what I had, which is why I became a purity teacher. I did not want that for my children. It was why I did not talk to them about sex or birth control, because Dr. Dobson said, if you do that, they're going to go out and get pregnant. Wow. Guess what? I became a grandma at 36, because guess what? When you don't talk about birth control.
Yeah. And Gwen, I can't help but pick up on the fact that that slide that you've shown, the misogyny, it's always the males in these religious environments often imposing the fear and the shame and the guilt and all of that sort of stuff that you've talked about.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I was part of the Bill Gothard movement. We believed children were a blessing. You know, I couldn't physically have more than the three children I had, but we were just all in, you know, and your money went to the church because that's where it belonged. And, you know, I do find it interesting. I was thinking about this earlier, you know, George Carlin, he talks about, you know, priests and how, you know, they've got the best scam going, because they'll tell you that, you know, God is all powerful and, you know, he's going to send you to hell if you don't obey his 10 rules. But he loves you and he needs your money, you know? So when we're deep in this religion where we believe God can, you know, do miracles and multiply the loaves and the fishes and all of this, we never question when we have to give a lot of our money. We leave that and we're so scarred by it that when another group asks for money, we go, ooh, why are they asking for money? Well, because they don't have an all-powerful being that's going to take care of stuff for them, you know?
Well said.
So, but it is, you know, because you do sort of feel like, okay, what's there? And actually, it's when my daughter, the one who wondered, you know, why now, Mom? Couldn't you have done it when we were a kid, when, you know, before you made me get rid of all my toys and not watch Scooby-Doo? And yeah, I was all in that 80s satanic panic. Like, I can tell you every kid's toy that we thought was evil.
Were there Smurfs in there? Just for the benefit of
No Smurfs.
Dungeons and Dragons were in there.
Oh yeah, no Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah,
opening a portal to the demons.
Oh yeah, and the thing was we really believed it did, you know. It wasn't until my late 30s that I discovered that my panic attacks and my anxiety weren't demons attacking me; that it was a physical panic attack thing. And I just got to say, meditation and medication work so much better than the spiritual warfare prayers. But those did help some, because they force you to slow down and breathe slower. You know, so there again, I think that's what's so tricky about intense religious environments is it's very isolating. You only see the people there. Everybody else agrees with what you're doing. And some of it works, which is why you stay in, because you see how that works. And the other part of it, and I pulled this one up, it's black and white thinking, and you're all thinking the same way. And so what happens is God does become very real for you in that group. I mean, I can tell you story after story of God meeting needs and taking care of me and, you know, experiences with that were very real in the moment, that I would share in front of the church, that I would put in our prayer letters. And yet when I look back, I realize that actually I was simply interpreting very normal events as though there was a God. Right. So, and I was often giving credit to God for something someone else did that was kind. You know, I remember doing a whole praise thing about God sending me shoes, you know, and, but the truth was my mom had visited, she'd seen I needed shoes. She had an extra pair of shoes and she sent them to me. The person who deserved credit was my mom, who had seen my need and met it. But instead, my black and white thinking, my insulated way of living, you know, created that environment.
Yes, if the answer to everything is always going to be God, well, then the way that we got there, we just fill in those blanks. The answer is always going to be God.
Exactly. Exactly. It's always God. And, you know, it's, and in this, your body in this, this life, and this is where purity culture came in, is that your body was something you had to subject. And Paul talks about it a lot when he talks about, he has to buffet his body daily and he has to fight against, you know, his body that does what he does not want to do. And what he wants to do, he doesn't do. And it's all because his body is evil. And he even talks about wanting to be able to leave his body behind. And it creates this very enemy animosity with your own self that I found coming into nudist life has just been completely different. So, you know, just kind of scrolling on this, I found this and I just, you know, fundamentalist, which I was, believe the problem is eating from the tree of knowledge. In fact, I even stopped going to a library once because they had a big tree of knowledge on the wall with books on it. Yeah, yeah. Like there's more to that story, but that's not what we're about tonight. and I love that, you know, this the problem is cutting it down. And so now I actually have earrings that have the tree of knowledge on it because I love that so much. And then here, again, just an illustration of a very normal event. I went looking for pictures of sun behind clouds. They're all over. Mm. Anytime we saw this, it was like, ooh. Is Jesus coming back now? Are we ready for when he comes back? Oh, what do we need to do to make sure we're ready when he comes back? It was just a cloud. It was the sun in the cloud, but we interpreted the world that way.
You're living with a heightened sense of expectation and a heightened sense of alertness because you're always looking for him to come back.
Yes, yes. And we have the, and as humans, we are pattern seeking. We seek patterns. That's how we survived, you know, by looking at those patterns. And, you know, when you look for patterns, you will find them, you know, buy a car that's a different color. Suddenly you'll see a lot of cars that color.
Right.
It's not that there's suddenly more of them out there. It's just that you're aware of it. And so when you all agree things are a certain way and you look at it, that's how it happens. Now, me as a nudist, I want to tell you a little bit about how I've been able to walk away from a lot of that. Number one experience occurred when I was sitting in a hot tub with six men and we were all naked and I was the only girl. And we were talking about tractors and the fire department, if they had enough volunteers, and what the menu was going to be for the cookout the following weekend. And all of a sudden in my head, I went, I am completely naked with six guys and nobody is assaulting me. It's right. Not me. It's not me.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
Not what I do.
Wow.
It's not what I do that drives other people's behavior. It's not. I'm not responsible. Simply being a person does not invite that assault. It does not invite that bad behavior. It also, being nude, all of a sudden it was part of that discovery that this is me. This is all me. And I've lost about 40 pounds. I put a few on when I was sick last month, so it's now 40. My diet is healthier. I used to eat candy all the time. Climbing the stairs was a workout. And now I love to walk. I love to do, you know, minor exercise. I will never be a big athlete. One, I'm just not coordinated enough. Eric knows that. Trying to get me aligned in the camera. I lack that special coordination. But, you know, suddenly I wanted to eat things that made me feel better later. I wanted to do things that made me feel better later. I wanted to take care of myself, not buffet myself, not punish myself. So much of that Christian lifestyle was about punishing myself for missing the mark and for not doing things right. And, you know, it helped that the men in my life, whether it was the church leaders or my husband, believed as well that that was the case. You know, the time that I got checked out when we were at the high school for a parent-teacher conference, you know, I had sinned because I had worn a color that had caused someone to check me out. And so this freedom here. So that's one of those principles, though, that whether or not you ever get comfortable taking your clothes off, you know, in a social setting, or even if you're not comfortable taking your clothes off by yourself, if you though can remember, though, that, you know, your body is you. It's not your enemy. You can love your body and you can accept your body exactly as it is, because it's what got you to where you are. And also realize that if you have been victimized and shamed about it, the person doing the shaming is who is wrong. Right. That's where the wrong things came in. The other thing is that way of, you know, interpreting everything a certain way. And Daryl shared this in one of the talks recently. You can't unlearn English if that's what your original language. And a lot of these messages I'll never unlearn. What I'm doing instead is I'm translating them when they come up. When I hear the, oh, maybe that was your fault, I translate it and go, oh, wait a second, that's the old language. The new language is, no, I have been respectful and I have handled myself well. That person's bad behavior is not there. Speaking of bad behavior, one of the other questions I get living in a nudist community is, aren't you scared? And what about the children? How can you have children there? Well, number one, in order to be in our community, you have to pass a background check. So you can live in any neighborhood and you don't have to do that. Two, I know all my neighbors and they know me. And we all know everybody. And yes, we get some creepers in sometimes with ill intent. And it's not long before they're booted. And, you know, it's not tolerated. And I've had worse, you know, creeps out in the textile world. That's what we call the people who wear clothes. We talk about going out into the textile world.
I love that.
Yes. Yes. So we go out into the textile world. Now, one of the things you do have to remember to do if you've been here for a while is if you're going out to the textile world for a trip, especially if you're someone who's a camper or an RVer, and everything looks the same. Like when I travel, you know, camping for me is a Marriott. But, you know, if you're in your camper, often you've got to put a sticky note on the inside of your door to remind yourself that you're in a textile community now and you cannot leave your camper naked. So that's just one of the other tips. And again, the other thing is when you suddenly start learning to love yourself, you get to start discovering the things about you that you love and that you want to do and that you enjoy. And again, social nudity may not be your thing, but what might you want to do? What have you been afraid of doing or felt shame about doing or thought, well, that's for other types of people? Go try it. Go explore it. Learn to love yourself. Find out what's working for you. And you know what? Even if you go try something and you discover you don't like it, guess what? You just learned something. And another quote that I have, this is, I don't know, I probably stole it from someone and forgot where, but I like to say, it doesn't matter what happens. It's either going to be great or it's a great story. Sometimes it's both.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You know, Gwen, you made a comment there too, you know, to just learn about ourselves. Often we're so supportive of other people, particularly if we're going through a journey in life but we fail to be as supportive of ourselves. And it's often been well said that we need to treat ourselves the way we would treat our best friend. And from what you've described there, you're learning to treat yourself, or you've gone through a journey in life where you've learned to treat yourself as you would a best friend.
Yes. And in fact, that's a little trick I use when there are moments where And I deal with asthma and anxiety and allergies. And sometimes it's like a trifecta of ick. And I just don't feel like doing what I need to do. Like, I'll know I need to get my nebulizer out, but I don't feel like doing it. And the translation I do now is I go, if this was your daughter who needed you to get up and do this, would you do it? And if my answer is yes, I get up and I do it. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes if I'm coughing, I'm like, I really could use a cup of tea. Would I get up and do it if it was somebody I cared about? Yes. Do I care about myself? Yes. Get up and make yourself a cup of tea. You know, it's
That's powerful.
Yeah, it's been very transformative. Very transformative.
No, go ahead. This is kind of making me think of like how I'm selecting clothes. Like if I say I have a negative body image, if I was wearing no clothes, I'd have to really come face to face with that like every day. And you were kind of talking about that a little bit ago, but for me, I find that I don't wear tight clothes because it's like, I don't like how I look. I'm trying to get more baggy clothes, or I wear earth tone, so people don't really look at me, or I blend in. But this is kind of making me face some things that I hadn't really considered before.
Yeah. This is one of the funnest things about my life now is, again, so much of my life was, you know, dress to not cause your brother to sin, you know, and so cover up, neutral colors, nothing flashy, but still be pretty to your husband, you know. It's like this tightrope, you know, of stuff. Now that I live in a news community, I actually have probably 5 times more clothing articles than I ever have, because when I do go out, I dress up. And I've got this wonderful friend. She's also part of New Green, and I call her my fashion designer. She has helped me find a style that I like and put clothes together. And I now can get dressed up and go out and go, ooh, I feel pretty, and not feel guilty about it. And it's great.
You went straight back to your foundations and got the opportunity to learn what it is you like without any of that other baggage of your past way of dressing or your past wardrobe or anything like that.
Yes. And sometimes I like to dress just a little, you know, sexy. The other thing that's fun is we do have a lot of events here because it is a resort. And so sometimes I go in my closet and I go, well, what do I want to carry home tonight? Because...
Oh, that's fantastic.
We dress up for the party, but you know, most everybody's naked within an hour, you know. It's kind of like, here, yeah, you know, get comfortable. So just a couple other little slides. Again, your body's not your enemy. Please remember that your body's you. And so much of, and not just religion, the fashion magazines, the, you know, Hollywood. Yeah. We fight against our body, but guess what? Your body's you, and it's beautiful, and it's special, and it's unique because it's you. You know, one of the biggest things that I've come away with all of this is that I don't have to do anything to make me worthwhile, and none of you have to do anything other than you're alive, you're human. That makes you special, that makes you wonderful, that makes you worthy of respect and of love. And the first person to show you love needs to be you, because you're the best friend you'll ever have. So on that note, yes, it's about community. I found community here in my resort. My children have all visited. On the day one of my daughter, who was surprised, you know, wished I'd become a non-believer earlier in life, she was like, Mom, is this some sort of a cult? I said, no, because we are all so different. We come from all walks of life. In my community, we have all types of backgrounds, economic, social, political, religious. That's another thing. When you enter the social areas, you check your clothes, your religion, and your politics at the door. And fantastic. You connect as human. You connect with each other. There are people that you know, I can have a great time with, I disagree with where they're at, or I disagree with their political view or their whatever view on something or other. But because we connect with each other as people and we care about each other as people, we're able to enjoy life the way kids do when they're little and they get together. And it's just, hey, you want to be my friend? Sure, I'll be your friend. And I like to describe my resort as being at a family reunion with a bunch of cousins you haven't met yet.
That's fantastic. So instead of looking at things that we might not have in common, you focus upon the one or two things that you do have in common and make that the center of the relationship or the friendships, rather than having to think all in agreement and be exact clones of one another.
Right, right. Yeah. And again, there are different types of nudist communities. Some are a little more upscale, some are a little more rustic. Some have less events, some have, you know, more. It all depends on, you know, the particular group of people. And key is finding the one you like. So if you've tried a nudist community and it didn't fit with you, try another one. Because there's probably one out there that you'll feel good at. Here, little plug for Nude Radio and another tip. First, one big rule of etiquette as nudist is always carry your towel, because you need somewhere to set your bum down. You don't want to sit on something that you don't want on your bum, and you don't want to accidentally leave something either. The other big question that comes up about nudist is from guys, what if I get a boner?
And oh, thank you so much. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for bringing
we had that question arise in the chat there, and we were going to think of a delicate way to put that to you.
Oh yeah, no, I just put it right out there. You know, what do you do when they get a boner? Honestly, it doesn't happen very much. It does happen. When it does, hop in the pool, take a shower, roll over, throw your towel over your lap. You know, if anybody notices, they're not going to shame you or question it or anything. Now, if you get a boner and start walking around, sticking it in people's faces, you'll get yourself kicked out. But
is there a risk that could become sexually inappropriate for somebody how do we navigate? We have social cues in our everyday society of things that are inappropriate in behavior. If something like that happens in a situation like that, how do you navigate that?
If you're by the pool and suddenly you realize it's waking up, roll over on your stomach, think about something else. But honestly, it's very rare. It's very rare that it happens. And now here's the other thing. There are clothing optional places where if you want to walk around and show off your boner, you can do that. They will not be anor places. They will not be family communities. They'll be over 21 communities. Yeah. And that may be exactly what somebody was, but even there, there's going to be a guidelines. So make sure that you read the community's guidelines. Almost all of them will have, I can't think of anyone I've seen where they didn't have their guidelines on their website as to what was appropriate and what wasn't. Here, we do get to get a little bit more risque, but not much after 9 o'clock when the kids have to leave the events. So, you know, up until kids being there, you don't have anything going on, you know, after nine. You know, depending on the drinking, there might be a little more flirtation going on, but it's still never going to cross over into other areas. And Florida is a great place to be a nudist. One, we have more nudist resorts than anywhere else in the country. And two, our weather is typically good for it. This is a picture of Nude Radio. And this is the station that plays music 24/7. My show is on Wednesday nights. It's called Gwensday. And it's usually a handful of songs and then whatever I've been thinking about that week. And I love brain stuff. So there's almost always something about brains. It's streaming on the internet. And lastly, if you're interested in getting into this, American Association for Nude Recreation is the group I recommend starting with. They are a family organization. They've been around for quite a while. If you go to an Anner-related associated nudist resort to start with, you will most likely have a good experience. And you know, like anything, you're going to run into people that sometimes rub you the wrong way. But I'll say, I've been in a lot of different types of groups, and the percentage of jerks is really small in the nudist environments that I've been in. You know, I mean, it happens, but you know, it's, you know, it's the occasional like, oh, wow, oh, I haven't, you know, type of thing.
Would there be people that are curious, as we saw with our fantastic poll at the beginning, they're curious about the lifestyle, they're not sure if it's for them, that perhaps might come, become part of the community, but then feel it's not quite for them? How are they treated? Is it okay for people to maybe say, look, I thought this was for me, but maybe it's not? How does that happen? Or does that often happen?
It does happen. It's not for everybody. And, you know, sometimes what I've seen more so is that the person who realizes it's not for them becomes embarrassed and can sometimes start acting like a jerk because they're uncomfortable, and then they don't necessarily get a positive response.
Right.
However, most of the time what I see, it's so like in our park, the only place you absolutely have to be naked is the pool area. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to get naked, you just don't go in the pool area, and nobody questions that. We've even had people who lived here who, you know, rarely gotten, we have people who've lived here so long that they used to be nudists, but they've gotten to a point that they typically, either because of skin cancer issues or other reasons, you know, they just don't go out and get naked anymore, but they still love being part of the community. They're still an accepted part of the community. So
there's no obligation. There's not like, well, we've never seen that person without clothes on, and what are they doing living here? There's no judgment like that.
Occasionally, if the person also gives off a creep vibe, then it's like, yeah, why are they, you know? But most of the time, no. Also in July, I believe it's July 14th, or it's usually like the middle Saturday in July, Anner sponsors a free day that a lot of parks will participate in, and you can go get a tour, check it out. It's usually a little more welcoming. Most places make it free to come in and check things out, and it's a great way to check that. All right, one last thing. I just want you to remember, relax, love yourself, be yourself, be free, and you know, whether or not you ever try nudism, remember, it's not your fault if you've been shamed for being a victim or just not being perfect. I mean, face it, you know, so much of religious trauma is about, you had a wrong thought, you didn't give enough, you didn't show up at Sunday school on time. You know, there's just all these things that you can be judged for. And it's, you know, let that go, relax, love yourself.
Make yourself fantastic. And if we can be as open and vulnerable with ourselves, if we can just be sincere and be our authentic selves, that helps to shake off that religious trauma and all that baggage that we may have been indoctrinated with.
Absolutely. Now, at the same time, I'm still working through mine. This has helped me. I've made leaps and bounds of progress. But I still have a whole pile of religious trauma that I'm working through. So...
That's a really valid point that you make, Gwen, that none of us are fully healed as such. You know, we're all right, navigating our way, and that recovery is not linear, and we all have things to do. And that's what, I guess, the value of communities like Recovering from Religion helps us to work on.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that there is a kind of an important part that we've skipped over that I think really kind of helped me, not skip, we touched on it, that really helped me kind of be clear about how this works, the social contract. You go into these situations knowing what the boundaries are, and it is clear and concise and well-defined beforehand. I think that coming from religion, many of us, and I think I'm going to venture to say, especially males, feel like they have carte blanche in situations. But when you have a contract and that's all spelled out for you, that makes things so much more safer than I think even outside of these fantastic communities. If I'm wrong, please correct me. And what are some of your thoughts?
I totally agree. And, you know, that's really a principle you can carry into whatever group you might decide to get involved with. You know, if you decide, you know, rock climbing is your thing, or kayaking, or, you know, knitting, or whatever group you get involved with, you know, make sure that the social contract of the group you're in is one where your independent thinking is welcome, you as a person are respected, that you are not subject to one person's rules about how you're supposed to live, because these abusive environments happen outside of religion as well. You know, key is making sure you're part of a social contract that values who you are, values your individuality, and gives you room for autonomy and acceptance.
I love that, Gwen. You know, I've heard it similar to what you said. It all comes down to treat people with respect and dignity and don't be an asshole.
Yes. Yes, which is tough, because I just heard that as we are, I don't know if it's actually true, I didn't Google and check it out, but I heard that as we're forming, that our asshole is one of the first things that develops. So, you know, it's why it's sometimes hard for some of us to not be one, because that's what we started as.
Wonderful.
Born an asshole.
Some people are born an asshole. Some people die an asshole.
Okay, all right. All right. That's still making me.
We've had some fantastic metal pictures come through.
Thank you, Sasha,
for a giggly session. Gwen, that's been an awesome presentation. Thank you so much for that. We've got at least half a dozen really good questions that we'd love to put to you, and probably allows for conversation, but getting some huge applause and appreciation from everybody here. Thank you for that.
Cool.
Where do you want to start with the questions, Eric?
All right. I'm still
giggling.
Sorry. I can't.
He's still
giggling. All right, I just have this mental picture, but go ahead. All right, please.
Well, we've been noting some of them down. And again, apologies to anybody who's here watching live, who's given us questions. If we've missed it, please drop it again in the chat if we do miss it. There's no intention. We're not trying to miss any out. So there's one question. And you did cover this already, but why do many people from religious upbringings get uncomfortable with topics like nudism? Why is that uncomfortable to people from a religious background?
So I think the specifics for each person will probably vary, but on a more general level, so much of your religious life involved your body being something that was your enemy, that you had to subject to the rules, that you had to cover up, you had to wear the right uniform. And the idea of not having your uniform that, or your way of protecting yourself, you know, I mean, think about it. When you went into church, you dressed to show everyone else that you knew how to dress right for church. Mm-hmm. Or
outward appearance.
Yes, your outward appearance was very much how you were judged. And without that, you know, you just, it's just you. And, more than once, I've heard it said that if we could get our world leaders to sit naked in a hot tub and talk about climate change and peace,
oh my gosh,
that we could solve a lot if we could just get them naked in a conversation tub.
Isn't that something we've often heard too? If you're nervous about being around people, picture that they're just naked, because underneath it all, we're all naked.
So when I was on the nude cruise, that's another great thing. You can go cruising naked. I got to spend a week on the water naked on a big cruise ship. When we were in port, if we weren't down under deck, we had to wear clothes, but we had comedians. So I got to go to comedian shows naked. And guess what? It did not help the comedian at all that the audience was naked.
But did it help the audience that the comedian was naked?
He did not get naked. He did didn't, but yeah, no.
Yeah, another good question here. How do you separate nudism from sexuality? You kind of touches on the religious connection to this as well, but what was that moment for you to distinguish those two?
So that's been sort of a process, and my more recent, and I meant to cover this, so I'm so grateful for this question. Your social contract is what dictates what is sexual. So if you are in a culture where your skin or your shoulders, think about the news article about the kids getting sent home in Utah because they had spaghetti straps at their prom and they didn't have a jacket because the shoulder was a way too sexual object to show. And yet if you're down at a beach in Miami, you got girls walking around with tiny bikinis and nobody's questioning that because the social contract on the beach in Miami is as long as you've got a tiny piece of cloth covering the super naughty parts, you know, you're okay. So, you know, in our environment, it's just your body. And so, and honestly, what I tell people is if I want to get sexy, I put clothes on, you know, I mean, I got a whole.
And you're right, depending upon the environment we come from, there's parts of the Middle East where showing an ankle is considered to be a sexualized thing. So.
Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's, yeah.
I'm kind of getting the sense that it's not all supermodels in this community. Like there are a wide variety of body types in there. Like the whole spectrum is seems like it could easily be represented.
And they're all beautiful, all beautiful. It's the more you see how different the human bodies are and you get to know people for who they are. Because again, you don't look down unless you got sunglasses on, but no, I'm kidding.
and you're right, it's that beauty and the confidence of who we are, carrying ourselves with who we are and how we're formed.
Yeah, and you know, it's, you see a bunch of people out there just dancing and having a good time or playing poker or, you know, throwing darts or whatever activity, and just, it does not matter how you're shaped. And yeah.
That's really powerful. Yeah,
there's very, very few supermodels around here.
Now, kind of along the same lines, here in the US, there is this awful trend of people being disgusted of public breastfeeding. What is that like inside of a nudist community?
I haven't seen it a lot here because there aren't a lot of infants. But yeah, no, it would not be a problem at all. And we all are kind of like, wow, you know, people get bothered by that.
That's always baffled me, that one. And I think that goes to the heart of that religious baggage that a lot of people have, or that prudish purity culture baggage. That's how a baby feeds. It's no big deal, but people can't handle it.
Right. No, I think that they somehow have equated that with some horrible judgment coming. I know when I was deep in, I was very actively against any sort of sin in the community because my belief system taught me that, you know, this was a Christian country that was currently blessed by God. But if we allowed sin to get a foothold, he would judge the country and destroy us all. And so our desire to stop other people from sinning was because we were afraid that the country would be destroyed. And we would often hear ministers comparing the state of the US towards Rome and Rome's destruction, and that we had to stop people from drinking and swearing and
I heard that too. It almost feels like these kind of tactics are separating us from our from where we came from, like separating us from being a part of nature, putting clothes on or breastfeeding in public. Like we're no different. We come from nature and you know what? I'm rambling. I'm going to cut this part out because it doesn't.
Well, I think I know where you're going with that though, Eric. It's this, we have this society that has this idea of how we're supposed to fit and behave. And yet there's this very natural part of, you know, we're the only animal that wears clothing on a regular basis, you know, and very few, you know, I mean, you've got, I guess you could say some of the peacock feathers are a type of decoration, you know, and I'm sure there's some animal somewhere that puts clothing on somewhere. I'm not thinking about some, but you know, why, you know, it's one of our defense mechanisms and our ways to judge.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We've got some more questions that we can run through.
All right.
So what, oh, first of all, just some basics. How big is the, say, the community, not necessarily just your community, but say the community as a whole, who, say, through the states, how big would the nudist community be?
I'm taking a guess, and I'm probably going to get it wrong. And you can, if you go to the ANR website, you can probably get some more details on that. But I know of at least a couple dozen nudist resorts. And I think there's probably three or four times that scattered throughout the US. I do know there's none in Kentucky because Kentucky has laws that prevent social nudity.
Right.
There's quite a few, for those of you coming in on the Discord, who might be near Austin, there's Star Ranch down there. There's also a couple of other good ones around Houston, a lot here in Florida, handful of the ones up north. But if you go to those right now, you're going to see a sign that says, sorry, we're clothed for winter.
I like that.
Man, so, that's awesome.
Well, this sort of piggybacks onto that question. So is there any legal risk, say, in the US for being a nudist?
So it is possible that you could, you know, encounter some, you know, perhaps you work for a small company and they find out you're a nudist and they decide they don't want you anymore. If you're a member of ANR and you are, you do have legal representation, if in the event that someone uses your lifestyle against you. You know, one of the cool things though, is that for most of us, the only people who ever find out we're nudists is other people who are nudists. So it is a big thing. You know, you don't out someone else as a nudist because you don't know if their family knows. You don't know if, you know, their work knows, if, you know, you don't know what social cost being a nudist might be to them. So you don't out someone else. I kept it more quiet when I still had kids at home, but now that, you know, the divorce is final, the dog died, the kids are grown, I'm like, ah, I'm a nudist.
Yeah. So what happens in the community stays there. It's a respect for everybody who's there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Eric.
Are there any sort of safety measures a person would need to take whether being a nudist in the community just on a regular basis, or it sounds like you almost kind of addressed the safety measure kind of going out into the textile world.
Yeah. So again, make sure you know the guidelines of the community you're in. Again, make sure you've got a towel nearby, you know, so you have something to sit on, you know. And I would say, you know, make sure you know the resort you're going to beforehand, so that you know what you're getting into. And again,
the boundaries.
Again, and if you know, I mean, I don't know, one of these days I might try that hedonism down in Jamaica. I've heard it's really a trip. But that is way more than, it's not a family place, but, it, you know, I have some friends who've gone down there, and it sounds like it be fun to do once, you know.
Mm. So it sounds like the real physical safety thing that needs to be addressed can be addressed with a towel, getting sand or dirt in your bits, or
yes, you know,
being pokey or getting poked in the butt or something like that.
Yeah,
that's again, it, a towel. Yeah. Taking Douglas Adams to heart with bring a towel wherever you go.
Yeah
So when people first feel like they'd like to perhaps venture into this community or the lifestyle, who are more apprehensive about it? Is there a certain age bracket that's more apprehensive, perhaps a certain gender?
So I think I can better answer that by saying who I've seen tends to embrace this more. And we definitely see that as people get into their 40s and 50s, they tend to start experimenting and joining it. And so like my community and the people I know who are nudists are very disproportionately retired. So I still work. So, you know, after a weekend of fun, I'm like, all right, guys, you keep partying this week. I'm going to go make sure you get your checks because I'm going to work. So, yeah.
What's the, so the average age of more retirees, as you were saying, what about trans communities? Trans individuals are welcome in the community as well, obviously. There's no...
Yep. Now, again, that I would suggest if you are trans that you check out, you check in with that particular community to make sure. I have not seen a community that is not welcoming, and I have met and, you know, have trans people in my life that, you know, I care a lot about, and, you know, have never seen a problem here. But I do know that because it is more of a newer sort of hot issue for some areas, I would just make sure that the community is welcoming before showing up.
Very good. As we would with any aspects of society, I guess we just make sure that it's a safe environment for people.
Yeah.
There was a great question too that came through the chat, which kind of ties in with what you're talking about. What advice can you share about just improving our body image? And you've touched on this repeatedly, but in a nutshell, how would you say we could really improve our personal self-image and our body image?
So I would encourage you to start hugging yourself. Just hug yourself and tell yourself, you know what? I love you. Love yourself. And realize that there is no perfect standard. And I want to go back to that supermodel comment I made. You know why there aren't supermodels here? Because there really aren't anywhere. What you see when you see the supermodel, that's all airbrushed and tucked in, taped and everything else. You take off the clothes and everything else, and everybody's got a little bit here and there, you know.
Well said. Yeah.
Yeah, if I took off my clothes, there'd be so much airbrushing that you'd see. There'd be tape everywhere. No. It takes so long to look this good.
It's more comfortable not to wear clothes. Yeah, I find it so much more comfortable not to have clothes on.
Yeah. Sasha, do you have any other questions?
No, I think we've covered most. Apologies to anybody if we've missed. Again, last chance, chuck a question in the chat if you'd like to, and we could put that to Gwen. But we've covered a huge array of topics.
Oh my gosh. There. Yeah, we really, really have. Gwen, this has been a fantastic discussion. I can't thank you enough for coming on here and exposing us to the truth about nudism. This has really been enlightening.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed it, and I really hope that you'll all take something positive away from this, whether or not you ever try it out.
Fantastic. Folks, very liberating, very enlightening. Thank you for the presentation.
Folks, we have got some resources. I've already put them into the chat, and if you want to learn more about Gwen, I would honestly encourage you to check out her Gwen's Day new radio show. Those are in the chat as well. Now, before we conclude, Gwen, do you have any final thoughts or anything that you wanted to talk about that we hadn't covered?
No, the only other thing I would say is, you know, I just absolutely love the Recovering from Religion group and, you know, how that has just been, you know, again, having that opportunity to heal and to learn and to grow is just fantastic. So thank you, Recovering from Religion, and thank you for letting me chat today, and hope to see y'all at one of the nudist places sometime. Oh, that's the other cool thing is that there are some nudists who tend to be more nomads, and so they'll do 3 months here, 3 months there. So so like one of my friends was here a couple of weeks ago, and he was walking, and all of a sudden someone's like, hey, wait a second. They'd met at a nudist resort out in Texas, and here we are in Florida, and neither of them knew the other was going to be here, but it was like, hey, you know, and that sort of thing happens a lot.
like a big extended Perfect. Community that you get to hang out with.
It is. I have friends from all over now because they come here for, you know, 6 weeks or 2 months. Although my resort is a little bit Hotel California-ish. Like I came for a week and now I live here. And
you can never leave.
there was one time, this was over the summer, I was chatting with this couple and they were talking about how much they were enjoying it. And I said, oh, when are you leaving? They said Wednesday. And I said, okay. And then they were talking more about how much they love it. And then they mentioned that they had something going on at home and they weren't really sure when they'd go back. And so we're getting ready to leave. And I go, oh, I'll see you next weekend. And they're like, no, we're leaving Wednesday. I says, I know, I'll see you next weekend. Nope, I did. I saw him next weekend.
That's amazing. You know, Gwen, you made a really powerful point there too about this huge sort of extended world of friends and this bigger social circle that you have now. And so many of us who have worked here and volunteered with Recovering from Religion will attest to that. Yeah, we've left our narrow insular worlds and we've discovered that there's a whole world of amazing new people to get to meet.
Yes, I think that's the best part about leaving religion is like you only knew your people. You had your very insular group and everybody followed the teachings of the one person or they got kicked out, you know? And being able to have all these diverse opinions and backgrounds and it's wonderful.
Well,
Gwen, thank you so, so much.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.